Happy endings and climactic battles await as we look at the final piece of the Neon Genesis Evangelion media empire in the oddly named fourth installment of the Rebuild series. Will the wait for this film be worth it, or will fans fall out of sync with this new generation of storytelling that comes 14 years after the first film in the series released? Find out along with us as we get in our Eva and Angel fight our way through. This is Kaiju Versus History, Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0, Thrice Upon a Time.
Welcome back to Kaiju Versus History. This is your one-eyed, red-suited Shinji hater, Miles. And joining me is a no-eyed father of another kind, Patrick. Patrick, you have twice in a row. I mean, well, not twice in a row unless you're...
Two movies in the series.
Unless you're listening to these, like, all rebuild at one time, but we're recording these all at one time. Put me as Asuka.
Yes, the one-eyed, red-suited lady herself.
You know I hate Shinji, so there is that.
Every once in a while, I write those intros specifically for one of us, and usually there's just some like alliteration that goes into them. So it's funny when it doesn't work out that way because we don't really schedule who does. Or I don't look ahead to see who introduces which episode. So. It is funny that you got it a couple times in a row. As soon as I was done with this intro, I was like, oh man, I want to go back and see, is this the longest title out of any Kaiju movie that we've done? And
yeah, actually, we talked about this. I'm kind of curious if that's the case at this point.
Well, it depends because of the math equation that is in this title, Miles. Do all those count as individual words? Like, does 3.0?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant length.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, no. The length of it, too. Is this the longest title? Length of the movie. I was talking about length of the title.
The title, I know.
Yeah.
But I thought you meant title as in the movie that we were watching.
I don't know. This could be.
At this point in time,
have we gotten any 3-hour films in Kaiju land? Peter Jackson's Kong. Yeah, three full hours.
The Peter Jackson. Yeah, what was I thinking? I'm just a absolute buffoon.
Well, I was about to say, is this the longest titular Kaiju movie?
I don't think so.
I was about to say, if 3.0 plus 1.0, if that counts as 7 words,
it does not
because it's like math, then I think it might be. But otherwise, Godzilla, Mothra and King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack, I think is still the longest title, right?
Yeah. And we've had some other random ones here and there. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is not the longest title.
I was about to say, at this point, when this episode comes out, we will also have watched Monster X Strikes Back Attack the G8 Summit, which is a pretty long title. And what else?
Yeah, you know,
that's about it. I think those are some of the longest ones. This is a mouthful, Miles.
let's talk about that, Patrick. Tell us what's in a title, because it's not one I particularly love.
Well, there are parts of this title that I love, parts I don't love. I don't like the mathematics. No, I do love the mathematics in the title. I don't like the thrice upon a time.
I like it because it's kind of cute where like, oh, we were going to be a trilogy and this is not Evangelion 4. This is 3.0 plus 1.0. Like that's cute. I enjoy that a little bit for the kind of, you know, it's the thrice upon time that I really don't like.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is not the title that went out with the film internationally across the globe. It was subtitled Triple in Ecuador, The Hope in Brazil, All Over Again in Poland, in Turkey, just straight up Once Upon a Time, which is kind of funny. And then I don't know how this translation came out, but Bailan Nyagya Zoo in Vietnam was three times Once Upon a Time, which I think they took the three and the one you know, from the mathematics section and got edited.
Not a single one of those is better.
Well, the thing is, this whole series had a great dual nature title for the English, you know, not in the original Japanese, but this movie in the Japanese is just Shin Evangelion Gekko Joban. So this is, I think, the first one that adds the Shin, you know, the new kind of word in front of the title, which sets it apart from the other films.
It does, but it's also like, it also feels like a branding move at this point, because at this point in time, Shin Godzilla has come out. We are already waiting for Shin Ultraman.
Yeah, I think he was already announced to have worked on that film.
He wrote Shin Ultraman because that came out the next year. And the reason he didn't direct Shin Ultraman was because he finally was promising to finish this movie. So we have two Shin series. We have the whole idea of his little Shin universe like here. So I think he's kind of given that final branding stamp to Evangelion.
We'll get back to the Japanese title in a minute, but it does involve Shin. But I loved the parentheses titles, the not parentheses titles.
I did too, so very much.
And there's so much you can do with the themes of this film. You could do like a you will not end, or you will not escape, or you are.
I think
you will not end
is a phenomenal title. I love that. I think that should have been the title.
Yeah,
I think you knocked a grand slam right there.
This is not the end. I mean, that's a bit wordy, but you know, would work in a very similar way, because it is not. It talks about the finality, or
they all start with you. So I kind of want. I would have liked to have kept that. You know.
Yes, and it also kind of, you will not end is a little Englishy, because it's not really.
Well, you will not. It also kind of feels like, you know, each one of these is kind of reflected the mission statement of the film, and this one, which further swerves from the original material because of the kind of ending it has, the kind of defiance of the human condition in this film that Shinji finally kind of inhabits is such a strong factor here. I think that you will not end is, I don't know why we're talking about hypothetical titles, but I feel like that's the ticket right there.
I literally spent like 5 minutes thinking up other things this could have been named, and I got angry at myself that both of these I loved so much more.
Oh no, I am legitimately angry that the movie's not called You Will Not End.
Hideo Akiyano, why didn't you call me? The other thing we got to talk about is the Japanese title. There's so much to talk about in the title, Miles. Well, first off, I do love the mathematics part, the 3.0 plus 1.0.
Yeah, I am on board with that.
It also harkens back to what this movie is, which is kind of a reset for the universe towards the end of the film, where you go from the end point 3.0 to a beginning, a new beginning at the end of the film. And it also works on the fact that we get this ability for the Evas to absorb other Evas in the film. So you get something where you add, I think it's unit 8 at unit 2, and they kind of splice together in a very mathematical way, just adding the two Eva's powers together. But yeah, the Japanese version of this film has what could be a musical note, a symbol like stylized for the poster of the film. It is potentially a musical end repeat symbol. So it has been also called begin repeat. There are also theories that it is, you know, just kind of, I guess, where the other titles, the HAGYU-Q titles, were theatrical references. This goes into kind of music theory. And there's a lot more that can be read deeper, I think, into the entire Rebuild series with the framing of this as kind of a orchestral piece as opposed to a theater piece. But there's just a lot. I'm getting a lot of these ideas from evageeks.org, which has amazing coverage of all the Rebuild films, but especially this one. There's so many interesting ideas that they put forth. So definitely check out evageeks.org. That's all I have time for the title. I honestly feel like we could talk about that like the entire episode, but we got to talk about this movie, Miles. What do you think about this movie? What happens in it? Maybe we should start there because it is a lot.
This movie is a lot. So, I mean, you know, we start off whenever they do these kind of slice of life things, they just do it super, super well. We start off with, you know, wait, do we start off with a fight?
Yes, there is like a 10-minute.
Mari's fighting some stuff with the villa, right? In Paris?
Yes, it starts in Paris. So we get a very extended action sequence.
It's a really good looking sequence.
Yeah, I'm honestly not unhappy with it. And it kind of heightens the, because you've already been waiting 9 years. You have to wait 10 more minutes to find out like what is going on with
Shinji and everybody.
Asuka, Shinji. Yes.
Yeah. No, we're spending time on Mari. It is far better than spending time with Shinji.
But it is also a more grounded action sequence. The third movie starts with like a space thing and you're like, what is going on? But this one, they tell you.
I mean, this one's pretty wacky too.
But they tell you specifically why they're in Paris and what their aims are.
Oh, I understand. So, but I think at one point, don't they use the Eiffel Tower as the spear?
Yeah, there's some good stuff. But yeah, I just like that the angels are these like giant drone things that she just mows through.
Well, because aren't the angels like also like in Congress with Nerve?
I was a little confused by that, but it does seem like Gendo is able to,
because they mention Gendo when they're coming.
Yeah, he's the ultimate enemy here. I love both the floating like battleships that are part of the Wunder here, but also I love that the damage sustained by Unit 8 at the last film isn't repaired here. I mean, that's what they're here to do in Paris, but she has like these kind of prosthetic robot arms that are grafted onto to Unit 8. And I think it's a pretty cool look, to be fair, that they do very cool things with the 3D animation with that. And it's like the first time in the series I felt the 3D animation in the final film really came into its own. And, you know, that'll happen with 14 years of progress in this style of animation.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is about another third impact. It's about another end of the world scenario. And it is basically the rebuild series. I mean, I guess the last act is the rebuild series version of End of Evangelion. It's about the absolute destruction of the world, Shinji having to make decisions that affect the world. Well, he actually does. He makes
I know sacrifices. He eventually gets there. And,
yeah, it takes him a while in this film, but I think we see the most proactive Shinji at the end of this film.
You know, well, yes, because we'll get there. You know what I do love about this movie is I think the first movie that actually has a previously on, because it had been 9 freaking years between movies.
pretty much needed, yeah. But it's so funny, all these films, and we didn't talk about it too much, all the rebuilds films had a next time on, which often had like tons of errors because they were like, yeah, we're gonna do this, I swear, and this is what this is gonna look like, and then they changed it completely once the actual movie came out.
Yeah, well, that Eiffel Tower spear was pretty sick, and we then get this sequence of, you know, Shinji and Asuka and Rei kind of walking and then getting discovered by one of their old friends.
Yes, it's a promise that they kind of made in the third film, but because we didn't actually get to see it, like all of Shinji's friends from school are grown up and have kids of their own in some instances. They have lives of their own.
No, there's a lot of great stuff. I love everything about them at this kind of last bastion of a village. And they kind of give you some. And again, this is a 2.5-hour movie, but like they do everything right in terms of the world building. Like they give you stuff within the dialogue of other centers and they do all this world building within the actual conversations, and they don't exposition dump. They just give you like information, and it's so well done. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to wonder, it's like, what happened? I wanted exactly this in the last movie.
Yeah, I felt like in parts I was watching a Studio Ghibli Miyazaki kind of slice of life.
All of that village stuff, 100%. Honestly, the wholesome Rey discovering her humanity is one of the best parts of this movie.
Yes, and is the most kind of character moments that I think Rey gets in all of Evangelion, not just the rebuild series.
I would 100% agree. And I mean, I think, and we'll talk about influence in a second. I mean, not in a second, but down the line. But I think this aspect of the movie has been the most influential, because I think this movie completely understands what makes Rey compelling. And they are able to do that outside of like Shinji, because she even says like, oh, before I just want to do something for a boy I liked. And mm-hmm. here she is discovering humanity for herself. And it's interesting to see that, because she's kind of a lost soldier. She doesn't have orders. So she is asking questions, and she's, you know, being told, oh, yeah, just live in the village. And she's figuring stuff out. And it is legitimately some of the, I mean, again, I said this with the second movie. I love the slice of life stuff. But this stuff with Rey is some of the best character work in the entire franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I mentioned Shinji is so scarred at this point. He is like stunned into silence for the weeks that they pass in this time. So this is really Asaka and Rey kind of time to shine.
I hate him so much, Patrick. I understand that he's traumatized. I understand most of my friends like just lay into me when I talk about how much I hate Shinji Ikari and like pay me out to be some monster. And I'm like, no, you watch this. You sit through this.
What's so funny.
And tell me that you're not irritated as all get out.
Every time I see something terrible happen to Shinji because of, you know, having already watched
the consequence series of his own actions or inactions.
Yeah, I was about to say, because I've already watched the series, I'm like, oh, that's kind of good. It's glad that bad things are happening to Shinji. But yeah, in this movie, he has a full character arc, you know,
he finally
kind of closure. It's one thing that I don't think the original series or in the Evangelion gives you is a lot of his pathos being worked through finally.
Exactly. And what I was going to use too.
Yeah, well, because there's some very Freudian kind of things that happen in this film.
I mean there's been a lot series of stuff. I mean, it's edible stuff too, like the fact crushes was his mom.
the end goal and the reworking of the series to make Gendu the actual like
villain,
physical and representative villain of Evangelion is, I think, a masterstroke.
I agree. It's this choice that always should have been made. And frankly, that was always there in the original series, but this one just flat out says, no, this is the villain.
He is literally fighting his own father at the end of the film. And it's something that I don't think Hideaki Anno could have made as a creator unless he had gained those years, because he said there's a 3.5 year long documentary that was filmed about the creation of this movie. They were following him around NHK in Japan, followed him for 1200 days. And they only have like almost
how long is that documentary?
It's only a couple hours. It's like two parts. It used to be on Amazon Prime, but I think you can find it on Internet Archive. It's very interesting. I highly recommend it. Watching Hideaki Anno have multiple panic attacks. But I forgot where it's going with it, about
Shinji and Gendo.
And Gendo. It works out so well that we actually get to see him as the villain's final the final villain of the series. But it was pointed out to Hideaki Anno in the documentary, I think, and in him kind of failing to make part four after he kind of got depressed again after part three came out. He could write Shinji in the show and in in to be Evangelion because he was Shinji. He was representing an aspect of himself in Shinji, and he wanted
We don't have to get into that.
Well, he wanted to give Shinji in this film to the other two directors that were a part of the production team. Kazuyo Suramaki, Masayuki, the singular named Masayuki, because he, at the time this was being made, I think in 2018 is when they started production on this. He was closer in the age to Gendo than he was Shinji, like in the original series. So he had, I think, kind of a more, and he was a father, I think, at this, when he had his, he's a father, right? Am I making stuff up now?
I know that we're an audio podcast, but if you could just see me tasting a sip of wine and just throw my hand in the air, why not? Yeah, he's a father.
Maybe not. Oh, well, regardless, he is closer to Gendo's age in this film, and I think had a better understanding of that character. And we get a lot more Gendo's kind of past and pathos as well, because we get to see why he was doing what he was doing, because of the woman that he loves, because of, you know, the Shinji basically being a reminder of his failure to save his wife. And there's a lot of stuff going on with the character, which I appreciated and makes him a better villain because of it. He's really kind of one note in the series. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to save my wife, or I need to destroy the world to be with my wife. So yeah, Miles, I love this movie. The more I knew we were going to talk about it, the more I'm pulling out of,
Love this movie. I think this movie is also another reason why I love the rebuild stuff. My love for the second film, notwithstanding, even though I'm a little softer on the way that movie ends. I think the way that this movie ends is what makes the rebuild worth it. This was, I think, what always should have been the ending. A lot of people were, you know, obviously cautiously excited going in, and then, you know, finding out, oh, this is Shinji's happy ending to a degree. And mm-hmm. and the happy ending isn't the way you think it is. When you think, oh, it's a happy, oh, he defeats his dad and everything goes reverse to normal. No. That's not how this ends. One of the things that happens is that Gendo merges with the 13th, Ava, right? Is it the 13th?
Yep.
So every single time that we are a PG-13 podcast, that little MF-er is on screen, I'm thinking of one thing and one thing only. Does Gendo look like anything in particular to you?
He kind of looks like Cyclops in this series because he's got the
visor. But specifically, uh-huh. One of the dumbest moments in X-Men history in 2000, I read this stuff when it came out. I'm sure you did too. There was a X-Men comic called, or an X-Men crossover event called X-Men the 12. It was this big apocalypse storyline that killed Cyclops in so much that, like, Cyclops was killed, but also Cyclops merged with Apocalypse and became one of the dumbest looking characters I have ever seen. I just sent Patrick a image of it.
I was about to Google it. Ew, gross.
No, but that's Gendo.
It pretty much is. I like the void. I like that, like, because he used the device he got in part two to mm-hmm. basically make himself immortal and kind of demigod like in some ways, and it absolutely destroyed his eyes and his part of his face. It's pretty gnarly looking when he takes the visor off.
Yeah, I mean it's very effective. It also looks like the visor that Cyclops had when he was part of the Phoenix Five. There's a lot of Cyclops here.
yes. Yeah.
But I also love this because, you know, we do get some of the impetus of, not the impetus, but like we do get like where Gendo is coming from. And like we see his villain origin story, which is honestly really compelling. Yeah. I love his story because it's beautiful. A part of it is a mirror to Shinji, except Shinji didn't have the same, like, I think, system that Gendo did. Gendo actively didn't want to be around people. Shinji has only wanted to be around people and only wanted to be accepted, but also has had a crippling fear of being around people. The love story between Gendo and I'm drawing a blank.
Anami, his mom.
Yes.
Shinji's mom.
Is it Anami?
I think that was her first name.
That was like Ori something. I love all of that.
Oh, it, Yui is
Yui, 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 Yui Akari.
Yeah, I thought part of her name was Anami because that's Ray's last name.
I think it was Yui Anami or something like that. There was something because I remember when they were going to name their kid Ray if it's a girl, Shinji if it's a boy.
That's maybe what I'm thinking of.
Anami might have been, but no. Anami is something else. Ayanami is something else. I thought maybe it's Yui Ayanami to begin with. I don't remember. I watched this movie a year ago. I'm pulling that card, even though everyone knows we recorded all these at once. But I love that story. And the best part about it is, like, despite the fact that it's very compelling, you're also like, this is not a Magneto is right situation. You're like, no, you're still the bad guy.
Yes.
I get where you're coming from and I get what you're wanting, but you are crazy pants McGee.
Well, just because of the relationship between father and son throughout the television series and all these rebuilds, this is like the one time that I feel like everyone in the audience is just completely in Shinji's camp, on his side when he's fighting his father. And it is also one of the best fights in
It's all great. Of
Evangelion. It moves between 3D and 2D animation. It's in like this weird mindscape. So they get to fight in like a dozen different kind of locales that take you back throughout the entire series in a lot of interesting ways. It also breaks the fourth wall because at first they're fighting in Tokyo 3, and it's very interesting because the buildings kind of they're not destroyed. They just kind of like scatter and it looks like bad animation. But then you realize this is, you know, not real. And eventually they break through a set wall to like the filming of a kaiju action sequence.
It's really good. I know what you're talking about, but the one thing I do wish they did do, because they do have a shot of like a live action city. I do wish we had gotten like the theater shot from End of Evangelion because there's like one guy, because it was like almost a convention thing where like that one guy's like posting up and like, you know, giving deuces to the camera. I wanted something like that. But I also, it's much more difficult to do that now and it being kind of an anonymous thing than it was in 1997 when Evangelion was popular, I guess, you know, enough, but like, you're not going to like have to worry about like, oh, there is, you know, 6,000 people outside who want to get into this theater. But we are skipping a lot because we're also missing a whole lot of the how Shinji gets here.
Yeah. So they eventually do meet back up with Wille, with the Wunder, and Shinji basically submits. He allows himself to have one of the collars eventually put back on him, but
we didn't mention the collars at all in the last movie recording.
Yeah, I think it is in this movie. Well, there's just so much backstory that is added in here of things that happened between the second and third film, with Masato became pregnant and had a child in the 14-year time jump, which I think is mentioned in the third movie.
I think what's his face hooked up, and
then he sacrificed himself to stop.
Correct.
Second,
because she's like, I was pregnant. I don't think she said she didn't tell him on purpose or something like that.
No, he knew because he
knew.
You have to take care of the child now.
I mean, honestly, these last two rebuild films, like, completely, I think, do a disservice.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, she's like
one of my favorite characters. She has cool moments here, but, like, I think that as much as Rebuild does phenomenal things, and as much as this movie does phenomenal things, there are still failings of Rebuild that I think bummed me out a little bit. Masato is absolutely one of them. Don't we see Pen again in this one?
Yeah, Pen has a happy ending too. He finds other penguins. He has like a penguin family.
He's got a little penguin family
swimming around having a good time. So they really do cross the T's and dot the I's. Even members of the bridge crew, like I said, got like backstories. And
you were super excited to talk about one of them.
Well, just the fact that there is kind of like more of expansion of the universe in this film, and it's just stuff we did not get in the third film because of the amount of time that movie got to breathe. This film is almost a full hour longer, I think, than the third film.
It's an hour and a half longer. I feel like
it's 150.
Oh no, it's an hour. You're an hour. The other one was 9 minutes. Yeah,
yeah.
This is 2.5.
Yeah,
it's a full hour longer, and honestly, it matters. I mean, I said this when we talked about the third movie. If that movie had at least another hour, I think it could have been a 10, and that hour would have given us stuff to make this that would have paid off even better in this movie. There is specifically a sequence here, and we've talked about this character, and we're going to continue talking about this character that I love so much. Like I love the ending of this movie. I love it. But even there's a fatal flaw. Do you want to go ahead and talk about the ending of this movie? Want to skip everything?
I mean, yeah, we don't have to talk about every plot point. I feel like the ending of this movie, the third act, is the
so there's this wonderful sequence after like Shinji's more or less defeated his dad and kind of gets his wish in a sense. Everything kind of resets and we see this train station and we get to see some of the characters who we know and love. We see Shinji's friends. We see, oh gosh, what's his name? Kwaru.
Mm-hmm.
And Shinji's sitting at the bus stop and someone covers his eyes, says, guess who? And which is a reference to a prior interaction between him and Mari, where he's like, a girl with glasses and big boobs, which is an inside joke between the two of them. It's not him just being a perv. And there is this recognition that they get a chance at a real life. And the movie ends with them running up the stairs, holding each other's hands and kind of exclaiming that they are going to give it their best shot. And it's this sequence in particular. I love that. It's like, it's Shinji and Mari. I think that's a good choice, but I think this scene is perfect. However, the fatal flaw is, boy, don't you wish we had some background for Mari to make this finale sing, because this finale is so good. It gives Shinji the happy ending. It gives him the chance to be a person. Everything about this works. I mean, I know people that get super emotional about this scene. Honestly, I did too. And I mean, love Mari. But what's so well done about the writing in this particular movie, which that was absent in the last one, is despite the fact that we don't know really much about her, we get some bits and pieces in dialogue of things that has gone on with her, but we don't really know Mari.
Well, neither does Shinji, really. Like, how many interactions did he have with her in his entire life?
There is some context there that there's more to it.
Yeah.
Which I think is what a disservice some of the stuff being films has given us. But the fact that this scene still works because of how they've contextually written it and written those characters in this particular movie is astounding. I mean, the script writing in this movie is astounding.
Everything
I complained about the last movie in terms of the writing, this movie doesn't fix, because it does help. The last movie feels like I said last time we talked about it, like it kind of feels like Firewalk with me. We're like, yeah, this is all important, but in the initial release it's kind of gibberish, but when you get everything to like connect, it really works. And I love this ending. I like that it's Mari, because it shouldn't be Asuka, because the Asuka that they have written in the Rebuild series is very, very different and is, you know, someone that could be a friend of Shinji, but it's not someone you are at any point wanting to see like him kind of be with. But the other character who feels like she's also in a similar situation as Shinji, the way that she's referenced things, and you feel like you know, they make a big. This is the other thing. This is the first time that a lot of Westerners have seen like, oh, you know, we always use other culture stuff as inspiration for things, and it's fine. This is the first time you see someone use Western culture and names where it's like, oh, no, her name is Mari Iscariot. And it's like, OK, yeah, I see that. Makes no sense. But yes. Oh, but I love the fact that, like, I feel like she's supposed to be an analog for Shinji. I think she is supposed to have been the other side of the coin, and we just never got to see it. And the idea that she may have been like the traitor to somebody at some point in time, possibly Gendo. Like there's ideas that she has been kind of genetically enhanced, and
she is also a clone like Rei, like Asuka in the series, and just doesn't know it.
Well, so they also make reference that they are clones in this version of reality. I think yes. At some point they say in this version or in this dimension or something. There's some off the cuff reference that like in this version of reality. And so like when Shinji and Gendo are fighting, you kind of feel like they're in the fabric of the multiverse.
Yes, yeah, that they are breaking universes walls, potentially timelines. Walls, yeah. Yeah. Because they might be going back to the series in some ways. And the end of the film also is kind of a breaking of reality. Shinji, I guess, kind of learns from his mistake in the end of the Evangelion series at the end of this movie, because he doesn't try to repair the world that has been destroyed. The rebuild universe dies at the end of this film. And instead, all the characters and people that survived in it just have a happy ending in literally our universe. The end of the film turns into
a literal rebuild of Evangelion, because everyone kind of gets a shot at like real life.
And the ending lines talk about not being able to revert the world, but creating a new world that does not have Evas in it.
Evas, angels, any of that.
Yeah. So
basically creating our boring reality.
The birth of a new world, they give the name a Neon Genesis, a new creation, which is hilarious because that term just doesn't exist in the Rebuild series. They're all just called Evangelion, but it finally comes back in this film as the creation of this new world, or merging in the real world. Probably knew this from your research, but the train station that is at the end of this movie, the Ube Shinkawa station, was one of the ones where Hideaki Anno grew up. It is in Yamaguchi Prefecture in Ube, and part of the documentary is him like literally running through the station, getting kind of reference video and photographs of it for the end of this film. But yeah, I think it is very effective seeing them move from the animated world kind of into the real world. And it, like you said, is a callback to end of Evangelion and the end of the series in a way. Yeah,
how do you feel about the choice of not pairing necessarily, because they don't necessarily indicate a full romantic relationship, but it's the idea that it's Shinji and Mari. Well, how do you feel about that? Because I was super into it, not just because I love Mari, but like there felt like a kinship there that I think that was worth exploring.
Her character is added into the series literally, I think, just to be the ray of light at the end of the tunnel, and to prove to fans that I think Hideaki Anno was more capable of positive fan service than I guess it's not fan service, but fan kind of trolling that he had in the original series, where Shinji and his actions being so negative are because Hideaki Anno has a very self-deprecating and negative worldview of the otaku that make up his core audience. And he's said this in interviews a few times. He has a much more positive outlook on the creation of this. And from a New York Times article, he said about this film, quote, "As a creator, I want to make things that are entertaining but have depth. I didn't want our show to be some escape from reality type entertainment. I wanted people who watch it to feel encouragement to live their own lives." So I think that's maybe a little different from the TV show, the end of the series definitely ends on a much more positive note. And Mari is a literal metatextual representation of the positive, healthy relationships that people can have. And for the most part, I think it's pretty platonic because, like I said, I don't think they really know each other. I think they just,
so
he respects him.
I don't know. It's tough to say. I think it's open for whatever.
Yeah. I mean,
and I think that's the whole point of the blank slate, but they are hand in hand, wanting to face the world. I think there's something there. She's certainly being flirtatious, and the fact that he is also kind of being flirtatious back. I'm not saying this is a full-on romantic relationship, but I think it is certainly a possibility.
This ending comes, 4 or 5 years after one of my favorite animated films, of all time, Your Name, which also has a very similar ships passing in the night on trains kind of ending.
And I mean, I know. Makoto Shinkai is one of my favorite anime directors of all time. So you were preaching the choir, buddy.
So I think there's a little bit of reference there. I do think that ending as written, it really couldn't have worked with Rei or Asaka in the Rebuild series. I feel like either of them could have taken on that role. Like, I would have loved to have seen a normal and happy Rei from the
television series. Well, I would have too. And I mean, I know Rei is on the train station, but with as loaded, I think this movie made the point of like separating Rei from Shinji and Rei discovering her humanity on her own, so that when she is part of this new world, she is on her own. Because also, she's Shinji's mom, and that's weird. And then Asuka, she has her own thing. I was like, yeah, I might have had a crush on you when we were like kids.
Yeah, for her, that was 14 years prior.
Yeah, so I would have liked some more depth with Asuka, because I do feel like he failed her character a little bit. We get some stuff, but like, again, some of it's really good, and some of it feels like he's just writing her a certain way because a character needs to do it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel always like Asuka, because Asuka has a lot of pathos to her as well. And I mean, yes, the idea that she might not be the one true Asuka, and she might be some sort of clone from, you know, a different version of reality than the Asuka that we knew from the first two movies. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know, because we don't know what happened in those 14 years and what occurred. Does it hurt the movie? No, it's just it is something I personally have a problem with. Also, there's this weird point where he like makes sure that he like animates certain parts of her like lounging around half naked, very meticulously.
Well, I mean, we get
a
full nude backside of both Mari and Asuka in this film, and then also they recreate the end of Evangelion scene with Shinji kind of going into Asaka's mind to help her, but her costume, her plug suit is like so much more ripped. Like, there's so much more skin showing. It's like, what? You didn't have to do that. You could have made it look exactly like.
When she's all shredded and stuff. Yeah, I forgot about that, because like, it's funny because she had commented on her suit two movies ago, and there is some. Like, everyone likes to joke about Mari being kind of fan service. There's some weird stuff going on with Asuka. Always has been. I mean, this is the same character that they had Shinji jorking it to in the original series. Straight up jorking it. But I think that this movie really achieves everything that Evangelion sets out to do.
It is quite a capstone for the series. In a lot of ways, I think it really does synthesize so much of the show. There's so much kind of callback to End of Evangelion, and you have kind of a new hopeful ending, which is I'm very happy for Hideaki Anno, because he almost didn't do Shin Godzilla. He almost, after the third movie came out, he was in another existential funk, and Shin Godzilla helped to bring him out of that, and helped this movie happen because of that.
And it's so funny, because I remember him talking about people. I think he specifically said, like, everyone's mad that they think that Shin Godzilla is the reason I'm not doing Evangelion. It's like, this movie is helping me get those juices back. You know, yeah. Like doing this movie is actively yeah. helping me work on Shin God, Evangelion, because I can promise you I wasn't doing it before.
I mean, I can say everything I've seen of Hideaki Anno's Shin era is pretty amazing. You know, honestly, if this counts as part of it,
continually gets better. I think Shin Ultraman is better than Shin Godzilla, and Shin Kamen Rider is better than Shin Ultraman.
I still haven't seen Shin Kamen Rider. By the time this comes out, I'll have watched it, but it pains me that I haven't carved out but the time.
Shin Ultraman is great. Like,
yeah.
It's wonderful.
It was very fun to watch that in theater with other.
Are we watching that for this show? I guess at this point in time.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Everyone's be like, what is Miles talking about? Of course, they've already talked about it.
No, this came out
first. Yes.
Way after. A year after. But that'll be our. This is episode 209, Miles. And yeah, Shin Ultraman is 222.
This is nearly a year and a half before. For all I know, a new Evangelion like OVA has been announced.
Gosh, can you imagine? So,
like, to give us Mari's story, please.
Oh man, Fifth Impact happens, and she's the only one that can save us.
I don't need the sequel nonsense. I just want like legit her story.
Yeah, I'm on.
Like, give me a 45-minute OVA that's just like her story.
I'm also honestly surprised that we've never gotten just a full slice of life kind of anime based in the universe, because they've had
I feel like they've done a number of like dating sim type games.
There's tons. Yeah. Yeah.
That have done that. And I feel like there might have been a light novel or two about Mari.
Technically, a character that looks like Mari, brown hair, glasses, first happened
is in the manga.
I think in one of the video games, but also in the manga afterwards, like in one of the PS2 video games. I watched a 2-hour video about like all the extended universe stuff, and I was like, oh, that's so interesting that's kind of where that look maybe first appeared. There's a lot of movie here. There's 2.5 hours. Do you have a favorite scene, something that maybe stuck with you or you enjoy the most? Oh gosh,
I mean, like I said, I love the sequences of Rei kind of becoming a real girl. We didn't even mention the fact that, you know, she dies.
And you are impacted by that death because of the previous 20 minutes.
It is certainly a fourth impact.
Shows your character. Well, it's also
because she goes, which I mean, deserved.
It's so funny that she basically has the same LCL style death that happens at the end of Evangelion. The entire human race kind of turns into a pool of LCL, and I guess that is a thing with clones. They have to return to their LCL pools, or they kind of die. They just shrivel up. There's a lot of stuff about the pilots that doesn't make a ton of sense in the series.
No, it doesn't. It's very Spider-Man clone rules.
It's whatever serves the story.
But I love all the stuff of her kind of discovering her humanity. I would have loved for her to get more of that. Like, that's what makes seeing her on the train station so much better, is because like, oh, you know, she gets to actually do that. Yeah. And that's nice. Obviously, I said before, I love the use of the Eiffel Tower as a spear in the fight. I just think it's, I mean, look, we've had 4 movies, and not a single time has an iconic building or anything really been used.
That's the thing. Because Tokyo has been destroyed multiple times. Yeah. None of the classic Tokyo that we know exists anymore. And all the things that happen in other parts of the world are usually over like the ocean or just a very.
There was the one sequence when Mari is introduced that they could have done something, because I think that's supposed to be in Europe.
Yeah, it's like underground, though. It's in like their version of NERV headquarters.
Yeah, it would have been a lot cooler if it was like the French catacombs or something.
It's beautiful. Well,
I guess that would have fit them, but you know.
Their depiction of like the, you know, second impacted Paris, where everything is covered in like the red crystals. It looks great. It's, and like I said, it is some of the best use of 3D animation in the entirety of the series. Like it finally feels like they need it to tell that story, which.
Yeah. And then I guess for me, like the very final scene that we've talked a lot about it, but like also Shinji's drawn older, a little bit older.
Oh yeah. He's aged, I think, kind of normally where he would be at this point, maybe in his late 20s.
I think he's supposed to be a little bit younger than that. But yeah,
he looks like a salary man. He's just got on like a suit and he's got a briefcase, right?
Well, but he's always had that kind of get up on. He's wearing that stupid like starch white button down for freaking 14 years. But I love that sequence of them like running up the stairs together and like we're gonna discover life. I love that sequence. It really like that scene. I was like, oh yeah, they freaking did it. They nailed it. Mm-hmm. But what about you? What are some of your favorite scenes in this?
I mean, there's so many good ones. I think, I mean, emotionally, I really enjoy Misato standing in front of Shinji to shield him from gunfire from her crew.
That is a great sequence.
Have been impacted. And, you know, what's his name? The little sister actually shoots her, which is like, what? But the father and son battle is just so conceptually cool. And there's a little bit of Everything Everywhere All at Once to that scene, because they, like every time they clash, they're in like a different universe. They're in a different locale. And it's both beautiful and an important emotional scene, because it's about them kind of having ideological differences and physically fighting. I kind of wish that their Evas looked more different, you know, unit 1 to unit 13 or whatever it is, but they look almost identical. One has a yellow band on the arm, and that's like the only way I can tell the difference between them. But yeah, that scene's just so good. And then, yeah, we have a great denouement to this entire film that of Shinji just kind of healing the entire Evangelion emotional universe, like giving everyone kind of like their happy ending before he's ready to sacrifice himself to make all of this a reality using the magical spear or whatever is happening. He's willing to let his life go. And then it turns out his mom kind of takes his place. She's always been there. She's always been in the Eva kind of protecting him, and she expels him to sacrifice herself. And then Gendu unites with his wife and they both perform this sacrifice where they stab the spear through themselves. It's masterful writing. It is, I think, a great ending to, and you really just can't separate the TV series and these rebuilds because they work as to quote George Lucas, it's like poetry. They kind of rhyme, you know, whereas that series is so dark and negative. This one has the exact opposite kind of ending, you know, and in a way that I don't even think you can be mad at one or the other. Like at this point, if you're a fan of the series, you have to appreciate like the amount of storytelling that is being crafted over the course of, at this point, 25 years or something along those lines from Hideaki Anno.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Really, the few things that didn't work for me in this film are, I just need more Mari Illustrious. I just needed more of her. I think if they had given her a little bit more with Shinji, the ending would have been a bit more impactful. But I talked about that in the our third movie review. I love her character. I want to love her character more. I want that love to be more earned.
I said this in the third episode, or the third film's episode, but I really do think that rebuild of Evangelion would have been better served as a 4-season series than 4 movies.
8 limited episodes, you know, because it's already like the length of like 8 episodes somewhere in there.
Yes, the 4th film doesn't need as much. I would say an episode's worth of extra padding could have been nice in terms of story storytelling. It's what I really need is I need well, parts of 2 and 3 to get some more padding. I feel like the end of 2 needs a little bit more explaining. Also, it gives you time to breathe with a slice of life stuff. And then the third movie just, the third movie needs a lot.
Well, something you could do with a TV show you can't do with this movie is we could have gotten an entire just single episode about Mari. And it would have worked as a kind of a relief from some of the other like really heavy stuff that's going on. And it just works in that format. It doesn't work in a movie format. And I kind of understand why we don't get it.
That's what I would be hoping for, is like to have all the main characters at least have one episode that's like kind of centered around them, to where, like, you know, you pointed out with the third film, it's mostly from Shinji's perspective. Well, what if we had an episode that was from Misato's perspective? Like, we got to see what was going on in her head, and, you know, everything else can be kind of tweaked a little bit. You don't have to change too much, but like just a little bit of more world building and fleshing out. That's what I really want, especially from the third film, because there's so much that kind of, that movie flies by the seat of its pants. It's still good, but like, you know, when you watch it with the fourth film, like, it feels better. So much more makes sense, because it kind of builds, the third movie kind of sets everything up, and then the fourth movie like kind of gives you everything that you need. So you're like, okay, I see why we needed to get here. But I would have liked more autonomy from the third film. I would have loved that, because I think this movie, the script knocks out of the park. Yes. Do I want more from Mari and some of those choices? Absolutely. But I mean, I think this does exactly what a Evangelion finale should do.
Does a whole lot, Miles. Does a whole lot. It was a pretty well received film. It I think worldwide in a pandemic made $67 million. This I do have a note in our records. One of the highest grossing films of 2021 in Japan, but I actually don't think that's true at all. I think it's, well, if you imagine what else came out in 2021, I think the Demon Slayer movie came out, for example.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely crushed the box office. But yeah, I do think that this movie really helped to save the series as a whole, because coming so late, I think ignited a passion in both new and old fans for the series. It going to both the original series Netflix almost at the same time as these rebuilds all being re-released on Amazon and having new translations and things like that breathed a lot of life into Evangelion. Miles, would you be surprised to find out that this has on Rotten Tomatoes a 100% critics rating, this movie?
Honestly, no, I wouldn't.
Honestly, I'm surprised. It's hard to keep 100%. It has 29 reviews. They're all positive. And a 92% audience score, which is also, I would say, pretty high for something this long and complicated, part four of a story. I don't know. I think it's crazy that the fandom has kind of rallied around this movie, whereas the last one was kind of or received. On Metacritic, it has, I think, maybe a more representative of general audiences, as 84% critics, 65% audience score, and IMDb is very similar, has 8 out of 10 stars on IMDb, a 4.3 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd. And when it was released, it was one of the highest rated films on Letterboxd. I think it's gone down since then, so it might have been one of those things that started very high, like Everything Everywhere All at Once when that movie came out. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of blew up on Letterboxd. You mentioned maybe another OVA series. And honestly, Hideaki Anno has not ruled out that there could be more Eva in the future. He said he's probably not going to be the one doing it. And he originally saw the rebuild and other projects under Evangelion as a Gundam style series where you can just keep making new series on the concept and changing it up with different creatives behind the wheel, as it were. Do you want more Evangelion, Miles? Do you need it to be like a Gundam?
I don't need it to be a Gundam. I don't want more. I don't need future installments, mm-hmm, necessarily. I wouldn't mind maybe like a 25 minute episode thing of like, you know, what the real life was for Shinji Imari. But what I would love is stuff that takes place within the Rebuild universe. Like things, what would I like a movie or a season or an OVA of something, what happened that 14 years between the episodes 2 and 3? Absolutely. Would I like, you know, some that focuses on Mari's origins or Asuka's state of mind? Absolutely. Like there are things that I wouldn't mind getting from Evangelion. Sequels is not among them, though.
Right.
I wouldn't mind ancillary material, but I don't want additional material. If that makes sense.
There has been some shorts, including a small like proof of concept, more kind of like a music video called Neon Genesis Impacts. And it's about a girl band that exists within the Evangelion universe. And it's cute. It's one of those things. It's like, I really do wish that like a small series, a limited series or something within the universe, like you said, was created, and you know, from different voices in the animation world. I don't think I need a third Evangelion retelling of Shinji's story.
Correct.
I think it's been done perfectly twice almost, you know, for better or for worse. I think it's been done super well by Hideaki Anno twice. And it's like, I guess he could just keep raking in money and keep the series going. But if we do get it, I do want it to be a TV series. I don't think it needs to be a movie. So do you want to get into rating of this film?
Yeah.
I think we're kind of in the same area. My personal enjoyment's a 10. Despite a lot of flaws in this film and the series as a whole, Rebuild is great. It is a great addition to an already near perfect anime TV show. Great movie. But I really do think this movie is what the series needed in a kind of a wrap up. It encapsulates and does a kind of synthesis between the movies and the TV series, between old fans, new fans, and gives people in the same way that End of Evangelion gave people a new ending, gave fans that wanted a more positive ending what they wanted, you know. So it gives you everything you wanted, and even if you don't like the happy ending, I think you're just fine with this movie, you know, because all the other parts of the series exist. What about you, Miles? Where are you for personal enjoyment?
It's tough for me. I'm gonna say for my personal enjoyment, a 10. This does give me, for the most part, even though some of it is interpretive, exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And, you know, Shinji becoming a real boy for all intents and purposes is actually rewarding. The slice of life stuff with Rey, phenomenal battle sequences throughout this. I think it really kind of hits the nail on the head of defining the Human Instrumentality Project and Gendo's background, like everything that like I wanted in terms of like, what does this kind of mean for everything? Yeah. I think this movie delivers beautifully. I think it absolutely paints the picture that Hideaki Anno wanted to deliver. No matter what things could have been fleshed out more or what didn't make as much sense, you know, we're talking about like, oh, I wish this was I said this, you know, I wish this was like, you know, 4 seasons of television. But still, the fact that they were able to pack all of this into a single movie with the writing they had is phenomenal. And it's great. I think it is an exemplary Evangelion experience. And by and large, the Rebuild project is a huge success, despite some bumps in the road. How do you feel about the technical aspects?
I mean, this suffers maybe some of the same problems that all the Rebuild films suffered in. The characterizations that I wanted just didn't feel like they were there. And it's because I'm comparing it to the TV series that had, you know, 26 episodes and fewer characters, to be honest, than the Rebuild series does. This movie, since it follows a cliffhanger, it does feel the most film-like I made the comparison to The Empire Strikes Back for the previous film. That movie ends on a big like, what is going to happen next, and you know, kind of a bummer ending. And this movie picks up 9 years after that movie ended and tells that story in a very satisfying way. So the animation is best it's ever looked. I mentioned that in parts it looks a little toy-like, but they use, I think, some of the limitations of the 3D animation in the story in a positive way. Like when I said, when they're fighting in Shinji's fighting Gendo at the end of the film, and it looks like they're throwing around toys. These buildings kind of look like toys, and then it turns out to be a set. I was like, oh my God, that's so brilliant. At first I thought the animation team had quit or something, and it was just terrible, but it turns into a very, very positive part of my enjoyment of that fight sequence. But like I said, it was one of my favorite parts of the film. Some of the fights that happen where they're like basically free falling through like red sky, you lose a little bit of the scale of what makes the giant monster battles impressive. Scale is so important in those fights, which is why the ones in the city, I think, really kind of look the best. But yeah, this movie does that massive world ending kind of creatures very well in the same way that End of Evangelion did. I think in the End of Evangelion, at the end of the day, technically is a little bit better, but this is still great. It's got great voice acting, great kind of writing. So I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. It's a long way to say that it's just not perfect for me, but is as close to perfect, I think, as the series really has gotten. What about you, Miles?
Yeah, I'm kind of in complete agreement with you there. I do have some flaws in this. We've talked about it, but despite those flaws, everything is still delivered perfectly well. I think it's as close as this franchise has gotten. I 100% agree with you. So I wouldn't give it a perfect 10, but I'm going to go with a 9 as well. I think the script is great. The we've talked about how great those battles look. The animation and the combination of 3D and 2D art is phenomenal. The dialogue work is fantastic. Everything I think stands out. It's as good as the franchise gets in so many ways.
Yeah, and it's the last thing really the last major thing that we get in the series
that we know of.
Well, yeah,
we are a year and sometimes before this episode comes out, so we don't want to.
Yeah, what is Hideaki Anno working on right now? He's done so many.
As of recording, the extension of Shin Kamen Rider.
Oh, right. He's like making
he's doing what I suggested he do, the Shin
TV version. Yeah, that's so funny. I forgot about that completely. Right. What about for its importance? Where does this film land in kaiju movie, Eiga movie history?
It is too soon to tell. This is a problem we're going to be having a lot. Is
the newer films, yeah.
The recency bias. That said, I think it should be a 10. I think this film should have the influence that has been granted to the franchise since the 90s. I think it completes the Rebuild Project. I think the Rebuild Project is my preferred way to experience Evangelion in so many ways. And I think that it's just magical. In terms of Kaiju Eiga, it's tough because, you know, just like I had this conversation with some other people, like, it's not really a kaiju franchise in the same way. It's not really a mecha franchise. It's both and neither at the same time. It's very strange. And it feels like the Rebuild stuff is talking a little bit more about kaiju stuff than the original series was, but it's still its own thing. It's tough. I do think that we will see the influence of the Rebuild movies on kaiju cinema within the next 10 years, though.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if you had just finished watching the television series, you were like, oh, well, this is great. You don't know where animation is going after that. And you don't understand quite how impactful that original series is going to be until a little bit down the line. That being said, I think Hideaki Anno's storytelling and universe building, and honestly, his otaku love of all things kaiju. We've already seen in Shin Godzilla. We are going to see his love of Shin Ultraman in a couple episodes. I think it comes through his own original series in this movie more so than many others. And yeah, this movie really shines where End of Evangelion gave us a kind of a bleak ending. We're definitely harkening back to happier times here with this series, almost like the television series ending with Shinji in his own mindscape with everyone clapping for him and in his achievements. We get kind of a similar ending to this rebuild series. I think that it is a very good rewriting of an ending that kind of turns it into a cycle of reincarnation. And we talked about that with the title a little bit. That being said, I think I can appreciate this movie on a similar scale as End of Evangelion, and where it exists in kaiju films, it is really its own thing. And we've talked about that a great deal, but it owes so much and helps inspire so much of what I think, you know, has come out since the original series and this rebuild series has finished up. Honestly, we were talking about right before we started recording, Godzilla Singular Point. Yeah, you know, there's so much influence on that amazing series from Hideo Kano's Neon Genesis Evangelion. They're both super difficult to understand in the same kind of way.
The fact that it's a Godzilla show and Godzilla is more of an existential threat and a metaphysical threat than an actual kaiju threat is insane.
So I talked to you before we started recording. It's hard for me to give this a higher score than End of Evangelion, which it had 1 hour less. And I know it was more just kind of like the end of the television series, so it had a lot of the television to fall back on. But I think they're both pretty near perfect in a lot of ways, and also both not like the most important thing to kaiju cinema specifically.
Right.
So, I am giving this a 9 out of 10. I really thought about boosting it up.
I've gone back and forth myself. I'm just going to stick with what I put.
You did put a 10, right?
Yes.
Okay. We're both in very similar neighborhoods, but just like the previous film, because we're kind of not agreed on it being a 10, this does go down to a podcast final. Because you're at 10, I'm at 9. Podcast final of 9 out of 10, which. Yeah, I'm okay with that, because really the only 10 out of 10 movies this podcast has gotten have been the ones that are like pure
I mean, and I it's easy to kind of like lose that perspective when I'm talking about Evangelion, because it isn't just a pure kaiju show. It's something different, but it's also not a pure mecha show. It's something different.
It's its own thing. It's its own beautiful thing. And yeah, like I said, both End of Evangelion and this movie were really close to, for me, a 10 out of 10. But yeah, I gave, I'm pretty sure I gave End of Eva also like the exact same score, 9 out of 10. Oh boy, what a film. What a series. It's a little bittersweet here in episode 209, Miles, that we are finally done with End of Evangelion. I wish there was more. Maybe there will be in the future, but that's going to close the book on the entire universe. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for, let's go back over the entire title. Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0 Thrice Upon a Time. I should just mark off a whole point just for that subtitle
right
there. But where can folks find us if they want to chat?
You can find us or you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can tweet to us at Twitter, X, whatever they want to call it, at Kaiju versus History. Assume that's still around. You can go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. You can get on the Cosmic Crit Discord. Go to cosmiccrit.com, click on the Discord, and join the Cosmic Crit Discord. We have a Kaiju versus History channel. We are talking kaiju all the time in real time. talk to me and Patrick there and all of our friends. Check out our Letterboxd account to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Right, Miles, thank you so much. We're going to catch you next time when the legendary Monsterverse returns with a roar and a screeonk in what is both a lifeline to movie theaters still struggling mid-pandemic and the series as a whole. Will another versus movie between the two Titan Kaijus be enough to save the series from like contracts with Toho drying up, or is it going to prove to be a full-on Showa era inspired masterpiece for modern audiences? Find out along with us as we look into it next week on History versus Godzilla versus Kong.
Bum, bum, bum.